Local news, culture, and NPR.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Hope you're doing well, staying safe out there, bundling up, as it's been cold this past week. Later on the show, we'll get to meet the robotics team from Fallsburg. The Fallsburg's junior senior high school team had a competition the other weekend. I had a chance to go visit, see what's going on, see the robots battling out each other in skills. So we get to find out what happened at the tournament. That's later on the show. But first, as always, it's Friday on the local edition. And every Friday, we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shuangkok Journal. Chris, welcome back to the program. One of the issues that we've been talking about, and I think has come up in the Sullivan County Legislature recently, is the landfill. Ulster County is proposing a landfill that's very close at the border of Fallsburg in Sullivan County. Sullivan County Legislature has made a comment on this. Chris, what is the latest on this case?
Well, you know, this is an ongoing story, and of course, I'm covering it as much as I can. I noticed that Sullivan County Legislature had discovered that this was happening. It took them a little while, perhaps, but they have found out it's happening. And, of course, they're not terribly happy with the thought. They're considering formally opposing the proposal by UCRRA to have a county landfill basically on property that is very close to the border between the two counties. Now, to go with that, we should note that there has been talk. I haven't heard of any proposal, but there has been talk of UCRRA working with Sullivan County to actually have a joint landfill with property on the Sullivan side and property on the Ulster County side, so that the two counties would be involved in a group thing. You know, at this point, I would say that's probably as likely as, you know, moon landing next week, but you know, it's probably not impossible, because this is going to be a regional issue. I mean, whether we like it or not, it's going to be regional, because all of our counties are using Seneca Meadows, and if and when that stops, we're going to have to come up with something different. And well, you know, we've heard different things and different possibilities are being thrown around, but whatever. This week I wrote a piece. I talked to county legislator and longtime environmental activist Manna Jo Green. She represents the town of Rosendale and part of the town of Marbletown at the Ulster County Legislature. She worked at UCRRA on their recycling program in the 90s or the early aughts. And she was a stalwart worker for Sloop Clearwater on the Hudson River for a long, long time. Anyway, she knows probably more about landfill stuff than anybody who's not actually working at UCRRA at this point than anybody else. And she made some very important things. I mean, this has been going on for about 30 years, the search for a site for a countywide landfill, because this is one of those files that always ends up back on the desks of legislators and county executives. Whether they like it or not, it resurfaces. It's that bad penny that always comes back. There was, people have forgotten this, but there was a while back, there was a plan to site a large landfill in Saugerties, and that went away because, first of all, the community rose up against it. Well, to be expected, right? But then there was a lot of clay under the topsoil there, and it wasn't the clay, wasn't really firm clay. It took on a kind of a consistency that she said it was a bit like toothpaste. So it wasn't going to be good enough to host a landfill.
Yeah.
So that ended.
That doesn't look good at all. It has the consistency of toothpaste.
Yeah, that was the clay underneath the land at the Winston Farm. So that ended that whole Winston Farm proposal, really. And so then it was quiet for a while, and you know, but there's this lingering thing. They know that at some point this has got to be dealt with, and it's politically about as hot a potato as you can have out here in the rural part of the Cubs state. So what have we seen over the last couple of decades? We've seen a major move to recycling as much as possible. Some towns do it very well. Some towns don't bother much. Then also a big push on composting. Current county executive in Ulster, Jen Metzger, has been promoting that, pushing it hard. And Mark Ryder, who is in charge of UCRRA and is getting a lot of flack these days because he's the one carrying the flag for this landfill, he has also promoted composting as much as possible. And that's, you know, I mean, that's a way to remove about maybe as much as a third of the waste stream. Take everything out that you can compost. So, but that does mean, you know, some pretty difficult jobs and people will have to do them. So there you go. Anyway, you know, Mary Jo made a lot of points, lots and lots of points. But another big thing that she made point was to keep what they call C&D, construction and demolition debris, keep that out of landfills. Return it to use wherever possible. So, you know, come up with a rule, an instruction, or maybe even better, come up with a carrot rather than a stick.
Yeah.
To everybody in construction and demolition, try not to wreck the boards. Make them, you know, remove stuff as clean as possible. If you're breaking up a new building, try not to damage the sheetrock that badly. It might be trimmable and reusable. Anything that keeps it out of the landfill. And since it makes up about a third or 30% of the waste stream, the C&D, that could be huge, you know. So you know, between the composting of everything that's basically organic and fruity, that end, and then over here, you know, taking care of this kind of hard stuff, you know, just asking contractors and people to be more careful with it when they take stuff apart. And, you know, who knows? You know, maybe we can, you know, reuse a lot of a house that's being taken down, you know? I mean, I do know that already there is a kind of a niche market at the highest end for old homes in New England that are being dismantled because people want the 12-inch wood boards that are on the floor because you don't get those anymore. You know, you can't find them, especially if they're made of something like a, you know, like, you know, well, not from a beach, but I mean, if they're made of American chestnut, you know, I mean, that's already, it's like furniture grade. You know? So wham, that people want those. But we had to think about this for everything we dismantle. So that was something she made. And that would significantly also reduce the odors in landfill. So that, the other thing that she talked up a lot, and Mark Ryder at UCRRA did talk this up as well, sort of in the same vein, but a reuse innovation center. So, you know, I don't know how often you go to the transfer station in your town, but, you know, I go there every week. And I always notice that there's a lot of things like dehumidifiers and air conditioners. You know, there's a lot of those sort of electronic stuff sitting out there waiting to be, you know, taken away, whatever. How many of those could actually be repaired and given a new life? I mean, given a new shot of something and put back into use. That's another thing. And then beyond that, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into landfills that probably doesn't need to. It could be kept out and put into a reuse center and just taken from one person to another because, you know, it's a nice table, you know, or it's a set of chairs. You know, don't throw them away. Take them to the reuse center and you might even get a little money for them. And then the reuse center will sell them to somebody else. Not expensive. It will always be cheap. Be the cheapest stuff in town. But, you know, it'd probably be very serviceable and can get a new life and go on and not end up in the landfill. So all kinds of household items that people that are done with, but they just need to be refurbished. Just given a little bit love and then put back out. So that was a really interesting thing that both of them have been talking about that. And we have to think that will happen because I think the UCRRA has already designated a little building at their site to have this. And so, you know, it probably will happen. I'll be interested to see how that works. Mana Jo also said that she is going to join County Legislator Craig Lopez on a tour in Dairyland of the sites that are being targeted by UCRRA for purchase to become this landfill. Of course, the owners of those properties are not exactly happy about it. No, this is what happens, you know. So there's going to be a battle over that struggle. But she, Manna Jo, and Craig will be touring those sites and will be reporting to the county legislature on what they find. Right now, as far as I can see from a quick tour around them on the road, they're just primeval, beautiful wilderness. I mean, it's just lovely countryside, you know, as you would expect here. And I know that the owners of the largest property there just want it to be that way. They see it as a family center for them and their children and grandchildren, a place for it to come and, you know, be in the forest, you know, see the animals. I don't know that they're big hunters or anything, but if they are, they would probably want to hunt deer.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things that people like to do here. And they're not thrilled at the idea of having to, of being forced to sell for a 100-acre landfill. So, you know, that's all this week. There was also something, another story which we're still pursuing, and the Shongum Journal will still be going on this one, which is that somewhere around 2000, no, there was a move to find, you know, again, to return to this subject, to look for a landfill site in Ulster County. And the DEC, Manna Jo believes that it began with a kind of a superficial survey by the DEC, which turned up about a dozen sites. And, you know, that got out there, word got out, and it was shut down pretty quickly, that one. That stirred the political waters, and they turned to steam pretty instantly, you know. So, you know, that basically made everybody realize, you know, oh my, this is not going to be easy. And it's not, you know, it's just not going to be easy. There was another study not too long ago by HydroQuest. This is a hydrogeology firm based over in Rhinebeck. Very nice guy who basically studied the whole county, studied the geology maps. And he came up with a couple of sites in Plattekill. And that didn't go very well with the county legislature from Plattekill, you know. So, and those sites have been mentioned again and were listed again this time around, but they're only 50 acres and they set off of 4455. And anybody who's driven 4455 across through there to say to Milton or, you know, to 9W over there, you know that it's a really windy, twisty road. And the idea of 15 trucks a day, 15 38 ton trucks going down that road, not the greatest idea. But then, you know, 15 38 ton trucks going anywhere,
yeah,
is not going to be something that people are going to be that happy about, especially in Ulster County in the summers when we have all the summer camps and we have the buses rushing around on little roads like Brown Road and everything. The thought of large trucks and buses on the same road, well, they can't share the road. They can't pass each other. You know, I don't think it's physically possible. Some of those roads are like 15, 16 feet wide. You know, I mean, it's crazy. So anyway, never mind. I don't think that's going to happen. But so the other thing that this landfill will require will be some serious money spent on upgrading roads, the smaller ones. So, you know, it's a big, big task. It's a big issue. But if Manna Jo is correct about it, and Mark Ryder as well, if a reuse center, if construction and demolition debris can be kept out as much as possible, you know, maybe.
Yeah, that actually sounds like a viable idea. I mean, you know, I always see it around the county. They always have these, I forgot the name of these workshops at libraries where the folks bring in things that are broken or whatever, like lamps or zippers, jackets that have zippers broken, and they're able to fix it. And, you know, all in the same sort of mindset of, you know, reuse and repurpose something or just fix something up that's been broken.
Absolutely. Well, yes. And actually right now there's a plan in Worsing to start a repair cafe.
Repair cafe. That's what I was thinking. That's what it is. Repair cafe.
Yeah. And I think we will cover that. We're in touch with her. Adriana Magana is doing that. It's, you know, I'll probably end up at the library because they have a nice room for it. The library, I don't think there's anywhere else that's quite usable because it wants to be once every 2 or 3 months. So it's not frequent enough to sort of have a place that you rent. But if they can use the cafe, if they can use the library, then I think it's viable. Yeah, and you can take stuff in there, and we don't have to throw everything away all the time.
Yeah,
which would be good. I mean, I know that, like, for instance, Ulster County has a good recycling thing with TVs and computers and that kind of stuff. I think that all goes to companies that take them all apart and reuse the, you know, things like diodes. You know, I mean, it's amazing how much of them can be reused.
Yeah.
Although I've got to say, over the last year or so, it has amazed me how many old cathode ray tube TVs, giant ones, keep showing up in that roll off.
Yeah, I mean, we have a music sale. I guess we do almost or do the same thing. We every year we have a music sale. A lot of folks bring, you know, their used musical equipment, stereos, TVs, VCRs, DVDs, and we do sell them. So it's almost like, you know, people are giving them a new life. But yeah, I'm amazed every year more and more those CRTs, TVs, those big TVs come in, tons of VCRs, tons of DVD players that now, you know, you could say it's becoming sort of obsolete, but there's sort of a movement now. At least on social media, I see folks sort of recreating what they had in the past. Like they're making it like an 80s, 90s room where they have all VHS tapes and playing it on an old school TV and VCR, you know, sort of recapture their youth.
Recapture the feelings of watching TV in the mid 80s. Yeah.
Well, when you had to rewind and just wait there to finish rewinding.
And of course we've seen vinyl. Records mm-hmm. have been reborn. People are rushing out and buying little record players. If they get bitten by that bug, though, of course, then there's a terrifying route down into incredibly expensive land, which is, if you're really going to get into audio fidelity with vinyl, then the dream that you have will be, you know, turntables that cost about $2,000-$3,000.
Oh, yeah. But Chris, that's where we got to leave it at. Thank you so much, Chris. We'll talk to Chris Rowley from the Schwanker Journal. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll get to meet Wolfsburg's high school robotics team. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It shouldn't be surprising. Trump did say all of this, as Olin said, during the campaign. He is doing what he said he was going to do. But what is striking is this climate of fear that has been created within the federal government to say, not just are we getting rid of these programs, but we are looking for who might be trying to work against Donald Trump. And you should be afraid.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
This is Jeff Loeffler. Join me each and every Friday, 10 to midnight, as we go deep, playing songs that you don't hear on the radio all the time.
It's the Deep End.
Deep End.
Deep
End.
Deep cuts and live tracks from the worlds of classics, psych, prog, jam, and blues rock. The Deep End, each and every Friday night from 10 to midnight, right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. On January 18th, I went to visit the Wolfsburg Junior Senior High School for a robotics competition. There were 31 teams involved and a lot of robots competing with each other in skills that involve climbing, stacking, and various other things. Here's my report from the Wolfsburg Robotics Competition. On a snowy day in January, the Wolfsburg Junior Senior High School hosted the VAX V5 Robotics Competition. The event welcomed 31 teams from across the New York State. They all came to Fallsburg to showcase their creativity, teamwork, and their cutting-edge STEM skills. And all these teams competed in an auto and driver-controlled challenges, all aiming for a chance at the state competition and eventually the world competition in Texas. Dr. Ivan Katz, Fallsburg Central School District Superintendent, shared why hosting this event is so important to the community.
I think it's fantastic for Fallsburg to be able to host a robotics event like this, given the commitment that Fallsburg has had towards robotics over the past several years. It's really nice to be able to host something at home so kids and parents can come and see the fruits of their labors.
Fallsburg has been expanding its STEM programs, aligning with the global trend. According to the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, over 70% of the countries have integrated robotics into their curriculum, and it's paying off. A 2023 study found that robotics improves learning outcomes.
I think this, that when this started, it attracted students at all ages and all levels, and now has become something that so many different kids just want to participate in, that it's really one of our shining stars.
At the heart of Fallsburg program is Don Thomas, the school's technology teacher and robotics coach. He explained the complexity of the tournament.
There are three processes going on simultaneously. Closest to us is the qualifications rounds. There, each team is assigned alliance partners randomly, and they will have 6 to 7 rounds for qualification matches. Afterwards, then there's alliance selection for the championship rounds. What's also going on in the field right down over there is skills, where each individual teams can try to score by themselves as much as they possibly can. There's judging going on of each team, where we have 6 judges that review the team's engineering notebook, plus they interview the team, and that goes for additional awards.
Okay, so that explains exactly what's going on at the tournament, but let me explain to you how this tournament looks. There are box cubes of playing fields with multicolored rings, red and blue rings, with obstacle courses around them. And each corner has a plus or minus sign. So each of those teams have to pick up these donuts with holes in them, put them on these poles, and push them to the corner to score points. Let's have Don Thomas explain it to us.
So the rings score you points. So who's ever got the ring on top, because they're trying to score the top ring. Okay, then if they put it in the positive corner, that's the corners closest to us.
Gotcha.
It doubles their score.
Oh, okay.
If they put it in the negative corner, it subtracts their score. That's the corners over there.
Yeah.
All right. Then at the end, you'll see some of the bots try to climb the ladders in the middle. All right. So that is additional scores for each level.
And these bots are built and programmed by the students of the Fallsburg robotics team. Is it just about building these robots and having them sort of compete against each other? That's something I asked Don Thomas, and this is what he said.
For one thing, they're interacting with other people in a positive way. They're team building, they're problem solving, they're networking, they're working on their interview skills with the judges. They're working on their documentation skills with the engineering notebook, going over the engineering process as well. Each of these robots has probably gone through 5 to 6 different iterations.
Ooh, wow.
All right.
How long does it take to build a robot like this?
Some of the more advanced one, it's hundreds of hours.
So let's meet Fallsburg's own team, 99561B, also known as Starstruck. It's led by Senior Bella Muska, team's captain, who started robotics in the 5th grade, inspired by her older brother. Bella loves the competitions.
I think like going to the competitions and meeting a bunch of different people it's pretty cool, because then you get to meet some of the same faces with every year that you go.
Yeah. So what are your hopes for today as a team captain?
Just to do okay. I mean, if we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. We're just trying to make the best of it.
Each round in this competition is 2 minutes. The first 15 seconds, the robot has to run on its own, which requires some programming. So here's sophomore Robert Ferreira discussing how coding the robot's autonomous mode is done.
What kind of coding you do? Python?
It's Python, yeah.
Python, okay. Great. And where did you learn that? Here in Fallsburg? Or?
I learned it here in Fallsburg. We have a computer science class, actually, and I took that, and that's where I learned it.
So what do you hope for today?
Really, just for my program to not mess up. I mean, I coded it yesterday, so I don't know how well it is. I didn't get to test it too much, so it's working good so far, though.
How long does it take?
It takes a while. I think it probably took me 2, maybe 3 hours to do it.
To code?
And, yeah, and all it does is back up and put a thing on it, and it's just a lot of trial and error trying to figure out how much it needs to move and all that.
Senior Robin Maldonado is one of the team members who tracks all the progress for the team in their engineering notebook, which is part of the competition. Like Don Thomas said earlier, the judges are reviewing these notebooks to see how these team members work together.
So, like, you have programmer, you have builder, but then there's, like, another thing involving a notebook, so I mostly just note down the things. I guess you could say, like, whatever you do for the day, I log stuff.
Meanwhile, senior Ellie Sadrasky shared how she combined art with technology and helped design the robot that was in the competition.
So I got into robotics during COVID. It was my 8th grade year, and my friends were in robotics, and I was like, I might as well do it. My teacher's the coach. I'll have fun with it. So for me, it was mainly just designing and art. So I do the designing for our team.
Okay.
But some kids know how to engineer, so coding, and some kids know how to do math and science.
So everyone has like a different specialty.
Yeah.
At the Fallsburg Junior Senior High School, 31 teams gathered in this gymnasium, each vying for a coveted spot at state championships and ultimately the nationals. The atmosphere was electric, filled with anticipation and determination. And of course, midway through the competition, pizza was served to fuel the young students and their supporters. Among the spectators was my 5-year-old daughter, Lucy, who was thrilled to watch the older students showcase their robotics creations. It got me wondering, what does an event like this look through the eyes of a 5-year-old?
I'm climbing the wall with my robot to get all the way to the top. And the rings are trying to get up there, and I'm trying to use my controller.
So do you like seeing these robots?
Yeah.
What's so fun about these robots?
They're moving, and I'm controlling them with my controller, and I'm wiping the screen so it doesn't get dirty.
Do you want to be on the robotics team?
Yeah.
Why?
Because when I turn into a high big kid, I get to be on the team.
Yeah.
They're French, and they try, my robot is over there, and my robot is there on the top, but I'm trying to get all the way to the top with my controller.
The students in Fallsburg ultimately finished in 12th place in the tournament. While they didn't qualify for the state championship, that's okay. As Bella said, the goal for the day wasn't just about winning. It's about having fun, spending time with friends, building robots, and learning. The students cheered each other on, exchanged tips, and formed meaningful connections that went beyond the competition floor. In Fallsburg, I'm Patricio Arroyo for Radio Catskill.
Looks like we're going for Ohio Allstate. Last second, they might have gone it on.
The rule says it has to encircle any part of the flower.
And that does it for the local edition. Thank you so much for joining me. I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. If you ever miss a show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Check out our website, wjffradio.org. Not only for the podcast, but for select interviews. And to sign up for our newsletter, where you get your news and interviews directly in your inbox every Friday morning. Lucy, have a good night. And thank you for being in my report. Everyone else, stay safe, take care. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Radio Catskill supporters include Wayne Memorial Hospital, a certified primary stroke center and a level 4 trauma center. Wayne Memorial now offers 7 physician specialties, including urology and gastroenterology, on its Honesdale, Pennsylvania campus. More information at wmh.org. And from the River Reporter newspaper, riverreporter.com, and listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.